Crypto and Dusty.
I mean, come on, guys. What are we doing here?
A show that, analytically, exists between 6 and 10 weekday mornings on Kansas City's only FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.
Oh, buddy.
Live from the studios that brought you.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Here's Bob Fesco and Dusty Likens.
Coming in from the 417 in our previous conversation, the Chiefs versus Texans divisional game was a hell of an experience watching some of the fans leave when the Chiefs trailed 21-0 and then experiencing Arrowhead exploding in the second quarter and just maintain that decibel the rest of
great
the game.
Great atmosphere that day.
They ran out of fireworks in the halftime.
It was great.
I was right there watching that game.
Right here?
Right there.
Is that where Jay
would not let me move. Literally would not let me move. Kent Swanson was in your seat. Jay Binkley was in this seat. And I was in that seat when they scored the first touchdown. And then I think the blocked or the failed punt, go for it for the punt, the fake punt.
Yeah.
And Binkley, I went up to go cut the clip. And he goes, hey, you're not going anywhere, Dust Man. And I was like, okay.
I just sat there.
I listened to Jay. I'd only been here like probably a year.
Yeah.
And I'm in here, Chiefs playoff game, and we're all depressed. And then all of a sudden we watch it unfold. And after the game's over, I went to Binkley. I said, so what do you want to start with? And he goes, well, Jay Binkley on tomorrow per schedule is 6:45. Got a pretty good fun week coming up for you all. Tomorrow, Allie Trost Martin, you remember her from her Kansas City days at Arrowhead Pride, now in New York covering all things soccer. And then Thursday, we've got a really special summer story session.
Yep.
Just remember that Excelsior Spring story. You're going to want to be here on Thursday. It's going to be special. I can promise you that. So loaded week coming up. And in about 15 minutes, we'll be joined by Josh Briscoe to talk all things Chiefs because mandatory minicamp is in full force.
So this is where you go. Mini bink goes to mini camp and regular bink goes to regular camp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hopefully.
Camp Bonawana, we hold you in our hearts.
Do you think he sings Hello Mudda, Hello Fada, Here I Am at Camp Granada?
It is start bench cut time, though, for Fesco, Dusty, and Mac.
Here's Fesco, Dusty, and Mac with this week's edition of Start Bench Cut.
All right. Start bench cut. Brought to you by the J.A. Southland Tow Service. Get to know with J.A. Southland Tow. Since we are in playoff-ish atmosphere, right? Stanley Cup tonight, game 4. NBA Finals last night, game 3.
Mm-hmm.
Are you sitting on the ice seats, courtside NBA, or right behind home plate?
Literally that order.
Okay.
Literally that order, yeah. When Jen was working for the Blues, they weren't very good, so I was a seat filler a lot of nights on the glass.
Sure, I'll do it.
Well, there were some nights you just didn't want, you know, like, right. And so, you know, I would go down there and sit on the, so I had that experience, which, I mean, I'm going to tell you, it was worth it, man.
Right next to the box?
Yeah, well, no, just on the glass. Sometimes I sat behind the goalie. Sometimes I would sit on the, you know, depending on where they needed a seat filler at that point of the night. So that it was so much fun. Courtside, I got the opportunity for 2 years covering the Spurs to sit courtside back when they would allow the media to do that. It changes the entire perspective of the game. It's a completely different game when you are sitting courtside. Gone are all the low-hanging fruit topics of the NBA when you have the opportunity to sit down low. And then behind home plate, yeah, it's you're not as involved in the action like you are on the glass or on the court when you're in the NBA.
Yeah, all these game one. I don't want to say game seven. That makes it too hard. Game one, I think I'm going Diamond Club, then probably courtside, then the ice. I just don't feel like I – did this make sense? I don't think I would appreciate it as much.
It's fair, man.
I don't follow hockey as much.
But I think once you sit down there, and you will all of a sudden appreciate hockey.
Yeah. But without having that, I think, you know,
because that helped me with the NBA. I'm not going to lie. You know, I was one of those guys with the low-hanging fruit type top. Now they don't play, and then you sit down there and you get your thoughts changed, and you're like, oh, okay, this is completely different.
Yeah, I'll go courtside. I don't care what game it is. That's just
would you be like DJ Khaled and just be on your phone the whole time?
Yeah, it was pissing me off. Yeah, every time I'm like, dude, you spent $100,000.
But for him, that's nothing. He doesn't care.
Another one.
Another email. Another one.
Thing of me, ice seats and behind home plate would be sick, but as far as vantage point for the game, I think courtside and ice are better.
Much better.
Yeah.
Okay, MVP discussion now. Star Bench Cut, who you think as of game four before it starts, Wemby, Cat, or Brunson for MVP? I will look up the odds as you discuss.
Okay, I'll start Brunson, bench Wemby, and then cut Cat. Because I still think Brunson is your leader in the clubhouse. They're up 2-1. Had it been 2-1 Spurs, I would have put Wemby in front.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm going to go Cat because they're up, and I think he's the MVP of the Knicks. I'll go Wemby because he's been fantastic. And then I will cut Brunson because I don't think he's been that great.
Yeah, but how are the voters going to vote, you know?
Right? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, through 11 quarters of the NBA Finals, the Spurs are outscoring the Knicks by 14 when Jalen Brunson's on the floor. Knicks outscore the Spurs by 24 points when Brunson's off the floor. He's shooting 33% from the floor, 23% from three. He's got as many assists as he does turnovers.
Yeah, you just said it. We're here again. We're like, oh, we can't.
We did this last year.
Yep. 82 points on 81 shots in three games. He's been the picture of inefficiency. And last night.
That is a lot of shots.
And last night, the Spurs were like, great, shoot. We aren't not going to double cover you at his most efficient game, but didn't win. So I don't know. I'm cutting him.
As of this morning, the odds are in. Jalen Brunson, plus 105. Victor Wembanyama, plus 165. Karl Anthony Towns, plus 400.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, he's going to win it. Oh, yeah. Listen, that's not what the question was. Yeah. I agree. Brunson's going to win it, and Brunson has not been good. That's my point.
No, but he's definitely – if they win, he's winning it, you know?
I think so.
It's like whoever wins the Super Bowl, the quarterback's getting the MVP, right?
Yep. That's way closer than it was, though, Bob. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was 12-1 when this series started, Cat. Yep. 12-1.
Yep.
No, he should be moving up the charts. Yeah. No, I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying we just know how the voters are going to vote, you know?
Yeah.
I can guarantee you this with my stamp of approval. If the Spurs win game four, Victor Wembanyama will be in first place.
Of course.
Just watching it go back and up and down.
Yes.
All right. This is when it gets weird because this is a thing, Mac, before
Please
you
don't
were
look
born.
At the TV, Dusty. Please do not look at the TV. My.
Okay. Fun on the Bluff at Fort Osage. We should go to that. Weirdest liquids you could put on your body or in your body. Brady's new juice, which is called Good Nut. I don't know if you remember this or knew this, Mac. Michael Jordan sold his cologne at one point that had his sweat in it.
Did not know that.
Or Will Levi's mayo fragrance cologne. It only stays on you for about 5 seconds.
Bob?
You want Good Nut, MJ Sweat, or Will Levis' mayo fragrance?
I'll start Brady's coconut juice. I'll bench Michael Jordan's sweat, and I ain't getting rid of the mayonnaise. I'm out on that.
Yeah, I'll start MJ Sweat. I'll bench the Good Nut, and I'll cut Will Levis.
Last time the Knicks won the finals was 1973. Start, bench, cut these three songs you jam out to. These were the top three songs at the time. Freebird, Smoke on the Water, and Money.
Money.
You know, money. Money. Pink Floyd.
Okay. Got you. All right.
I'm going to start Freebird. I'm just going to go in that order. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good order.
It really is. Yes. Because they were probably 1, 2, and 3 back then. So yeah, I'm going to start Freebird, bench Smoke on the Water, and cut Money.
This is probably just directed towards Bob because I don't know any of these places.
I know one of them.
I'm sure my stepdad knows a few. Steak and Ale, Sambo's, or Burger Chef? Those were top chains in 1973.
I don't know what Sambo's and Burger Chef are, but I'm going Steak and Ale. I'll start that. I think maybe there's a Steak and Ale around.
Was that
somewhere.
Like Ponderosa?
I've never been.
Is it like a buffet for steak?
But I don't know if it was a buffet or not.
Ponderosa, it opened in Blue Springs. You thought the world stopped back in the 90s.
We had a listener that worked at that Ponderosa back in the day.
We used to eat at a place called Montana Steakhouse.
Oh, I remember that. Nice. They had one of those in Lawrence,
it
too.
It was awesome. Yeah. I mean, I was young, but it was great. Like
nothing will ever beat the Sizzler, ever. We'll beat like the Sizzler.
There's one Steak and Ale.
Is it in St. Louis?
It is not. It's in Minnesota.
Oh, really?
There's one Steak and Ale and one Blockbuster.
Yeah, my wife went to the Blockbuster 2 weeks ago. She went to Bend, Oregon. I'm like, you've got to go see the last Blockbuster. She goes,
just do it.
Go.
I'll live vicariously through you.
I mean, you're there in the town.
What is Sambo's?
I have no
idea. Sambo's? What? Sambo's?
I would say Sambo's. Or Burger Chef? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
Somebody says the Jordan cologne wasn't bad, actually. You're just wearing a sweat. Ugh.
I don't know if we missed this, and if I did, I missed you guys saying this earlier in the show. Thanks for listening for me, but Pat McAfee and ESPN negotiating a $60 million annual deal.
We didn't have the number. We talked about that like 2 weeks ago.
We talked about
the deal. In negotiation.
Yeah, $60 million.
$40 more than Stephen A.
20 more.
Per year.
Per year.
And you wonder why he was doing the alt cast. I mean, they're going to work him.
Isn't Stephen A making 20 a year?
I thought he was making 40.
I thought it was a five for 100 million.
I swear to God, Dusty was right on
makes
that.
Makes nearly
one.
40 million annually across all of his media endeavors. But yes, five for 105 from ESPN.
And so ESPN is going to how much to this guy?
Yeah, so they'll triple it. Yeah, if that's correct.
I don't show up to work if I'm Stephen A.
I mean, Stephen A. Smith right now, I'm going to lose his mind.
That would piss me off if I was Stephen A. Yeah.
Longevity?
Yeah. Been here how long?
Yeah. Welcome to the real world, though, folks. Mm-hmm.
We're going to say that to Josh Briscoe coming up next on 96.5 The Fan, your own Kansas City Sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty, analytically the best morning radio show in Kansas City, as voted by people.
There's a lot of people talking out of their butt.
Fesco and Dusty is brought to you by Golden Oak Lending. Do you need extra cash? Golden Oak Lending can convert your home's equity into cash in as little as 14 days. Let Golden Oak Lending cure your blues. 96.5 The Fan. He's the first voice you hear 3 hours before kickoff and the first voice you hear after the final whistle.
Future Hall of Fame receiver, future Hall of Fame quarterback, being able to figure it out for the last half of the season.
Here's the new Chiefs Radio Network pregame and postgame show host, Josh Briscoe.
So a little bit of research before we get to JP here. So I guess Sambo's was started by Sam Battistone Sr. Name sound familiar? He was original owner of the New Orleans Jazz.
Oh, okay.
And then moved to Utah and sold it. It was also an abandoned building they cleaned up for the movie Edward Scissorhands.
Oh.
And I guess it shut down because it was a very racist establishment.
Yeah.
That's what I'm starting to see.
Yeah, if there was
their
a book with
was
that.
Like an African-American child.
Oh, wow.
And that was their mascot.
Oh, wow.
And it was called The Little...
Yeah, there's a book with that title that was banned from schools, yeah.
But earlier we talked about best sports atmospheres or places. Briscoe, where do you rank number one in your lifetime of the best sports atmosphere you've been a part of?
Well, I mean, I know I'm playing to the hometown crowd, but genuinely, like, I have so many memories at Arrowhead that are just, like, truly unlike anything else that I ever experienced. But I also, like, I had a great time. I've been to, like, 2 NBA games ever. I'm a Phoenix Suns fan, and so I got to go to a Suns game, like, a decade ago. I think about how just, like, perpetually pumping the music was the entire time. And I'll give a podium look also to the couple of times I've gone to see the Tampa Bay Lightning. NHL environments are, at least in Tampa, the environment is unbelievable. So I of course have a soft spot for Arrowhead. I really do think that stands out from the rest, but I really enjoyed the couple of NBA games I've gotten to go to, and live hockey is really special.
How did you pick the Phoenix Suns?
Great question. Yeah. My grandparents moved on my mom's side. You're a professional. They moved to Arizona when I was like 10. So we went out to Arizona to see them a lot, and I didn't have an NBA team. I, for a while, was a fan of the now defunct Phoenix in Arizona, then now Utah, not Coyotes. So all of my kind of tangential sports fandom became Arizona. It was all like around the inaugural season for the Diamondbacks. It was about when they moved out there. So I have a little bit of an Arizona sports allegiance, but unfortunately for me, the Suns are my strongest one.
Yeah. And yeah, unfortunately for you is the answer right there. So when you look at L'Jarius Sneed coming back, I'm just kind of like, all right, he's just a guy now. If he didn't play here before, I don't think fans would be that excited about a guy named L'Jarius Sneed coming in, but I think he can provide some depth. Where are you on this?
Yeah, I think both of those things are true. Like, I think he's closer to Kyir Elam right now than he is Mansoor Delane. Like, it shouldn't have any impact on Delane being a week one starter as the number 6 overall pick. But if he's in the mix there with Christian Fulton and you say, hey, you guys are the two veterans that have played some really good football who have also been nagged by injuries through serious portions of your last few seasons. Whoever's healthier, you're in the mix potentially to compete with Noel Williams for that starting spot, maybe to be the third corner on this team. I think they've got a lot of competition in the slot already with three guys who I think could all genuinely win it, and Rowan Wallace, Kohu, and Kennedy.
So I really do think it makes sense. Like I would understand that everyone would be really excited to have seen Cam Jordan have been the move yesterday or something that would address your pass catcher situation perhaps. But I think I haven't seen the guaranteed money on Snead still. It's not going to be full $5 million, up to $5 million. It's doing a lot of work. But I think it makes total sense. He's played more snaps for Steve Spagnuolo than the rest of the cornerback room combined. He might have played more snaps for Spags than the entire secondary. I don't know where Shamari Connor's math ends up impacting that. But it makes sense to have a little familiarity with the defensive coordinator, to have a veteran whose ceiling might still be relatively high. And if he just physically can't go, I would assume that his roster spot isn't guaranteed. I really think if Kyer Elam and Christian Fulton both have good, healthy training camps and Snead's just in and out of practice, that might be as far as the reunion goes. If Snead is the healthiest of that group and he looks like himself in St. Joe and the Chiefs training staff has managed his needs before, if that makes him healthy for 10 games, 12 games, 17 games, then it would be a huge upside for the cornerback room. So I still think Delane and Noel Williams being your outside starting corners is the best case scenario. I think you should still be rooting for Williams to earn that second spot. But I think having Snead in the mix makes sense. I thought it made sense the instant the Titans cut him. I was a little bit surprised to see them go back after investing in the cornerback position a few other ways this offseason, but I do think it still adds up.
So I want to give the credit to the tech sign. Did he play more playoff games for the Chiefs than he did games for the Titans?
Yes, he absolutely did. He played 12 games for the Titans. I don't remember where exactly he played more than 12 games in the playoffs here is nuts. But yeah,
wow.
he played more playoff games for the Chiefs than regular season games for the Titans.
Man, that puts it in perspective of how good the Chiefs have been, though. And when people get down bad of a 6-11 season after having, you know, all of this success around it, it's like, holy cow, that guy played more postseason games than he did in 2 years for the Tennessee Titans. All right, we got mandatory minicamp getting ready to go out there at the Arrowhead facility today. I mean, I'm just here to say nobody get injured. That's where I am on mandatory minicamp.
Yep, and you hope everybody who can be there is there, and every clip we've had of Patrick Mahomes over the last couple of weeks has given me a little bit more confidence in that knee. I have tried at every turn to kind of like limit my expectations just because what we're watching Patrick Mahomes appear to be on track to do right now is like, this is a little bit of an exaggeration, but barely. It's a little bit superhuman. Like the idea is like, yeah, you hurt your knee. And when was that? Like December. If you could just be ready for week one and look like the best football player in the world again, that would be great. I don't want to ask that, not just Patrick Mahomes, but Patrick Mahomes' knee. Like it's just a difficult thing to do. But everything we've seen from him so far has just been building up that confidence more and more. So anything we see from him, delightful. Keep everybody as healthy as possible, no question. And then, look, all of this is a little bit silly until we're talking about wearing full pads and playing through contact and everything. But Rashee Rice isn't going to be there unless I've missed some really big news this morning.
No, he's
so
still
there
in.
Is another opportunity for, I figured, yeah, for all of those wide receivers, for Xavier Worthy to be the number one guy out there, for Jalen Royals to get some work with the ones, for maybe Cyrus Allen to out-snap his draft slot. So I think that these are really meaningful days for the wide receivers, knowing that Mahomes is doing at least some of what you want from him, even Justin Fields needing to continue to kind of get acclimated into the offense. I do think the receivers probably have the most interesting thing to offer right now because there's a huge vacancy at the top of the depth chart.
Talking to Josh Briscoe, he wrote the article yesterday. You can check it out on what it means for the Chiefs and what it doesn't with Legarius Sneed. But where I got kind of hooked into it, Briscoe, is what it means for Noel Williams and Christian Fulton, and what say you, without giving away too much stuff that people can find.
I appreciate it. Go to ChiefsOnSI.com if you'd like to read along. Appreciate the plug. I think it is competition for both of them, more so probably for Christian Fulton. Like I said earlier, I think the best case scenario is still that Noel Williams is the other starter opposite Mansoor Delane. That's a rookie contract. That's years of team control. That's a great price for Noel Williams. That's what you'd like to see there. But you know the scene in Dark Knight where the Joker brings two henchmen into the billiards room, snaps a pool cue over his knee, throws the cue in there and says, yeah, you know, we're hiring for one position here. That might be the battle for Christian Fulton and Legarius Sneed. I really think that Fulton has one of the largest range of outcomes for any player on this roster, where if you told me, hey, he's not healthy, he's not playing well, and at the end of training camp, you'd rather have $5 million in cap space than have Christian Fulton, I think there's a chance that he's not on the roster. If you told me that he plays exactly as well as he did the last 2 weeks of the season, and he's healthy throughout training camp, and Spags starts to talk about him a little more glowingly, then he could be your week one starter opposite Delaney. So I do think that there is a huge, huge range of outcomes for Fulton. Mm-hmm. I think you could probably argue about the same thing for Snead. I hope it doesn't mean a lot for Williams, because I would rather that just be his job to lose. And then if you've got a couple of veterans competing for that third spot, and then even throwing in Kyrie Elam again, like if you get one of those vets to be a sizable third corner for you, somebody who you could put out there in a pinch, then you feel pretty good about the general health of your secondary. But I think a lot of it's going to probably sort itself out, just because Fulton and Snead have had so much experience with those injury issues the last couple of years. It's a battle of attrition, I think.
You know, depth never hurts anybody at any sport in any position, right? You want to have as much good depth as you possibly can, and I do think Legarius Snead gives you that. But Mac brought up something earlier with the young guys, and hopefully Spags understands that this guy is not a starter, that we do need to let these young guys play. And I think that's the concern for all of us, is that does he take away playing time? And I hope he doesn't, because that may be good for the immediate, but that's not good for the future of this team.
Right, and that was even kind of the weird thing with Noel Williams last year, where like I think he played a little better than he got trusted to stay out there, but also that ended up having a lot of connections with like, where did Trent McDuffie want to be, or where did the Chiefs want to put him? I wanted to see more Jalen Watson on the outside, Noel Williams on the outside, McDuffie in the slot. That's not how the secondary played out for a lot of last year. We all saw that. I don't think that Christian Fulton was going to get the like Spags veteran nod over Noel Williams by default, because I don't think Christian Fulton has earned that. I don't think he has become a Spags guy in the way that a lot of Spagnuolo's favorite players have become over the years. Snead is a Spags guy. And so I think that familiarity is a positive for, you know, not just having someone else in your defense who knows where to be when you're disguising coverages. I think it could be a positive for Mansoor Delane and Noel Williams to have Legarius Snead there and to be able to kind of help translate another level of, hey, I went through all this just a handful of years ago with Spags. But if Legarius Snead is 70% of what he was last time here, and that's enough for Spags to give him playing time over Noel Williams, then I do think we'd be frustrated in week four going, wait, what happened to the third round pick from 2 years ago that was really slotting in to be the other answer on the outside here? It can't impact Delane. You've invested too much in him for him to be anything other than a week one starter. But I do think that's the only kind of downside, the only quote unquote risk here is still something the Chiefs are in control of, which is would Snead potentially play ahead of Noel Williams, even if Williams is living with a higher ceiling, because he hasn't hit his peak yet. And Snead, obviously, we think has. So I also hope that the young guys get the first crack at that, and that Snead is just an additive presence. And if Snead beats Christian Fulton, that's fine. If Snead ends up playing over Noel Williams, that could be okay if Legarius Snead is that guy again. But the guy that even he was when he was on the field in Tennessee is not the version of him that we saw just manhandling Tyreek Hill in the playoffs a few years ago.
What is it to say that, like, could Snead play a little safety? I don't know if that's a possibility.
I do think there's something to that, because I would think this is really like pop, not even pop psychology. This is pop doctor here. I would think that with all of the knee issues that Snead wouldn't have as much versatility in the slot as he did once upon a time, just the twitchiness and everything. I don't know if that's true. That feels plausible to me, but I do think that there's a little bit of something with the way that Spags uses his defensive backs, and the fact that Snead is coming in with sort of a master's degree in Spagsology already from his previous years here. I do think the idea of him doing a little bit of a Swiss Army knife kind of thing is plausible. Obviously, like, Shamari Connor is going to lead this team in safety snaps this year, and last year he was their slot man corner. So I do think, and which didn't work out great, but that's how they went with it. I do think there's a world where Snead just kind of like helps where the secondary needs him, not in a true traditional safety role, I wouldn't think, but as the kind of, hey, we've got a weakness here. you're not going to play like peak Tyrann Mathieu, because now we're making Legarius Sneed a borderline Hall of Fame kind of player in a season following him being a cap casualty with the team who acquired him and paid him all that money. But if you could ask him to do a few different things, maybe he's providing depth for the entire secondary instead of just the outside corner position. I do think there's something there. And again, this all comes with an asterisk of like, are you healthy enough to do this for even 12 games this year? But if he is, I do think there are probably some more creative options available for him because of his familiarity with Spags, his comfort in the system, and the fact that he has done some different things in this defense before.
You know, you mentioned, you know, kind of a fit and how he's a fit to the system. The more I'm kind of watching from an offensive standpoint, it sure feels like Ken Walker is a perfect fit for what we have going on here in Kansas City. He released his own hype video yesterday, which I looked at and I went, that's really cool. This guy's genuinely happy to be here and be a member of this organization. It sure seems like that every day goes by before we do anything on the field, obviously, that that's a perfect fit right now for Kansas City.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because it's not like he's one of those guys who hasn't had success and then comes to the Chiefs and is really excited.
Right.
Like, he's the reigning Super Bowl MVP. He just won a ring. And still, I would agree with you that there seems to be like a real excitement to show up here as also, you know, like the biggest free agent addition that they made. And he's going to have sold the most jerseys of all the newcomers, I imagine. Because like Mansoor Delane's a top 10, nearly a top 5 pick, but he's a corner and he wasn't in the pros last year. You know, right. Kenneth Walker is kind of the splash that they made. I am so curious, and I don't know that we're going to even know this until September. We might not really know this until Thanksgiving, so please don't hold your breath. But I am so curious to see how we end up looking back. Do we say, oh, man, this was a perfect fit? It just needed to be a couple of forces of evolution at the same time. Or do we go, hey, you know what? This didn't add up as smoothly as we hoped. But Kenneth Walker being a great player and the Chiefs having a great offensive coaching staff, that was enough to make these kind of disparate fits work. Because they haven't had a player like Kenneth Walker. They also haven't had Eric Bieniemy and D'Amico, not D'Amico Ryan, that would be crazy, DeMarco Murray in the offensive coaching room, and obviously Murray at all, Bieniemy for a few years. So if there is a little bit of that simultaneous evolution that needs to happen to where the Chiefs can rely on Walker a little more just as he comes through the door, the chicken and egg of all of that will be fascinating. Did they sign Kenneth Walker because they want to be able to ground and pound a little more? Do they want to just be able to ground and pound a little more because they have Kenneth Walker? I really do think there is a world for all of that to gel really nicely this year, but they also didn't add a primary blocking tight end this offseason. You know, like Travis Kelce and Noah Gray are your top two tight ends by a country mile. Are those guys going to be able to do enough in the running game to capitalize on some of the defensive alignments that they're going to see with Walker in the backfield? Those are questions that I would love to answer today. I'd really love to say we could answer in training camp. Ultimately, again, it might be Thanksgiving before we know what the real identity of this offense is, but I am very, very excited to see it, and I'm very excited to see Kenneth Walker hit somebody again.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. I think it's going to be very good, but it all depends on Andy Reid, you know, whether or not he wants to utilize Kenneth Walker in a true running back sense and not an extension of the passing game.
A ton relies on this coaching staff this year, and obviously yes, that's not an unfamiliar position for them. That's been true every year, but this is the first year that it's been true off of a season that was a failure, right? I mean, you've had seasons that, believe it or not, we have had seasons that didn't end in Super Bowl wins, but none of those were failures in the way that last year clearly was. So I think, in a way, also, you're looking at Spags and the defensive coaching staff. Obviously, the draft started incredibly defense-heavy, but now you've given all of those young players to a defensive coaching staff that has to bring them along very quickly, like they did the last time. They had a big defensive rejuvenation that way. On the offensive side, it's Kenneth Walker. You got Tyquan Thornton back, but you lost a Hollywood Brown. You know, you kind of have your comings and goings of all reasonably the same sizes everywhere else. And ultimately, it is Kenneth Walker and Eric Bieniemy and DeMarco Murray and Chad O'Shea. Are those guys, again, coaches often before players here, are those guys enough to substantially change what you get out of this offense this year? And I think the Chiefs have told you, yeah, we're going to bet on our coaching staff and use the pieces that we already had in the cupboard. And again, I'm fascinated to see how that all pans out, because the best case scenario is easy. They win the Super Bowl. This team absolutely has the ability to do that because you have Patrick Mahomes. The worst case scenario, I don't even think it's as bad as it was last year. That was worse than any worst case scenario I could have conceptualized. So there is a ton on the line for this season. Obviously, they've been the most successful thing in American sports in recent memory. But this upcoming season is going to really dictate kind of how we view perhaps the end of this era, the start of the next one. There is just so much up in the air for this season. It's really exciting, but it's also kind of nerve-wracking.
The fascinating question I have is, will you try Tom Brady's new juice?
Yeah, could you tell me, Dusty, I think I saw, what was the brand called?
Good Nut.
Sorry, you cut out one. I do apologize.
No, yeah, it's fine.
What was the branding for Tom?
Yeah, it's called Good Nut for
men's wieners,
for coconut water.
You know, I'm not a huge coconut guy. If somebody gives me some, I guess I'll try it. I'm probably not going to buy Tom Brady's. Mm-hmm. What was it?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, hey, keep doing the great work you do. Football is only 92 days away from opening night on Wednesday. Next year, it'll be on Tuesday.
It's called Good Nut.
Yeah. Thanks. You're a professional. Briscoe, we appreciate the time, brother. Thank you so much.
You guys have a good day.
Nobody better. Josh Briscoe there. Coming up, we'll wrap this show up on the other side. Here on 96.5 The Fan, you're on for Kansas City Sports.
Good morning, Kansas City. It's Carter Jensen, and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty, weekday mornings starting at 6, right here on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by Golden Oak Lending. Do you need extra cash? Golden Oak Lending can convert your home's equity into cash in as little as 14 days. Let Golden Oak Lending cure your blues. 96.5 The Fan.
Mac, you want a cool basketball stat?
Sure. Yeah, hit me, Desmond.
Crazy but true, this comes from BetMGM. In Game 3, Dylan Harper became the third youngest player to score 10 or more points in the NBA Finals game. He trails only Game 1, Dylan Harper, and Game 2, Dylan Harper.
That's crazy.
That's awesome.
So they're set for... So what are you going to see in the Western Conference Finals for the next three to four years, Spurs Thunder?
Heck yeah.
So that's an interesting question because... You say that Wembanyama will shortly become the most hated player in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to start liking SGA more than they're going to like Wembanyama?
They might.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Wembanyama being hated more than SGA is an interesting
thing. It's hard to go from hate to like for a lot of people, you know? Like, if you already hate him, why are you going to all of a sudden like him then? You
LeBron's
know?
Done it twice.
I was going to say, LeBron, yeah, LeBron's definitely done it twice. I don't know whether more people like him now or hate him. He's all over
the place.
I don't
think we even know if we like or hate LeBron anymore. And I'm being serious. Like, if you ask me, you like or hate, I don't know the answer to that.
Wait till he's out of basketball.
Yeah, we'll hate him. We'll love him.
Yeah,
we'll miss him. It'll be terrible.
Like,
oh,
man.
You know, he was awesome.
But you mentioned, you know, with your Brunson stuff about how he's not efficient. Are we going to sit here and say Dylan Harper was efficient last night at 5 of 18? Like, people are praising him for the game that he had, because you look at the points and it's 13 off the bench and he was really good, but then you look at the numbers and you're like, the guy was 1 of 8 from 3 and 5 of 18 overall.
He should have drove more. Yeah, he kept shooting. No, I agree. He's also 20 years old, so that's why it's brought up.
Sure, but I'm looking at it like the there's gonna be love around Dylan Harper. I'm watching the game last night. I mean, man, he's hitting big shots, right? Like, when he needed a shot, there he is. Oh my god. But 5 of 18, 1 of 8 from 3, that is not pitch efficient, as they like to say.
No, it's not. And they honestly won last night in a game where Harper and Fox together were, what, 8 of 40 or something like
crazy.
That?
It was crazy. Yeah, it's like, you look at the box score and you go, how do the Spurs win this?
Mm-hmm. They were extremely efficient.
And that's why you don't look at box scores and stats and all that kind of stuff to try to figure out games. I mean, the Knicks had a decent enough lead in this one. They were just never able to close it out. Spurs had a big lead in this one. They were never really able to close it out. Like, each team got to a certain point and they couldn't get just a little bit further to put that other team in the rearview mirror. That's what happened. It was just a good basketball game last night.
It's been an incredible series.
You know, and
incredible series.
It's okay to sit back and go, what happened in that game? We don't have to dissect everything. It's just a hell of a game, and San Antonio ended up scoring more because nobody was really pitch efficient last night.
So this comes from X about the, Sorley conversation, in case you missed it. The kid that was gambling that got reinstated and now can play football at Texas Tech.
Sorsby.
Sorsby is the topic of discussion yesterday and today. And this is kind of interesting. It comes from Chaz Wright on X. Curious what Texas Tech has truly done wrong in the situation. None of what Sorsby did happened while he was at Texas Tech. Texas Tech was not the one who made the court ruling. I don't see anyone mentioning Indiana or Cincinnati.
Well, he doesn't play for either of those schools. So what are you going to do? But go punish a school that a kid doesn't play for? He's on Texas Tech now. That's why we're talking about it. I mean, what does that guy not understand?
Well, I think the comments from a lot of, you know, not maybe not Gene Taylor, but, you know, Georgia, yeah. A lot of the schools have been about the University of Texas Tech making a big mistake here, when I think this guy correctly, in my opinion, points out it's like Texas Tech is just a victim of an idiot. I don't think Indiana or Cincinnati should be have any consequences put to them, but Texas Tech shouldn't either.
But also, too, though, he's on your team. You got to do your due diligence. You know, you are a victim of your decisions, and they made this decision with the wrong guy. You know, that's just the way that it is. And so, you know, you chose to bring this kid in, and maybe you should have done better of figuring out what his baggage was. I don't know what the right answer is, but I do know he's on the team now, so tough. I mean, I don't know what to say. And
I know both their allegations are completely different on two different sides of the room, but that question and, like, the Texas Tech thing kind of gives me the Deshaun Watson vibes. Like, he did all that stuff in Houston.
Yeah.
And then Cleveland gave him the contract. It was like, oh, screw Cleveland. They did this. Kind of like how people now are like, they went and got a guy out of the portal who had this baggage, and now he's on their team, and now it's like it represents them. And I think that's the bed they made to sleep in. And I think that's why people are probably upset with Texas Tech, knowing that they brought this kid in that's going to have controversy and have this whole sort of thing happen.
But they didn't know. And that's the difference, where Cleveland knew.
Everyone knew.
The worst person. Fully guaranteed.
But I think once you find all that kind of stuff out, you just got to distance yourself from that player. And they didn't do that. They never distanced themselves from Sorsby. And now you've got judges that are clearly fans of Texas Tech at the Lubbock County Court, you know, voting in favor of that. And so it really does look, you know, fishy. The right thing to do, which in sports they never do the right thing because people are always just blinded by winning.
The right thing to do
would have been, if you're Texas Tech, we're distancing ourselves. We're done with this player. We can't have this guy around, because even if he never places one more bet again, the stank of him being a gambler that gambled on his own team is still out there. And if the NCAA was smart, they would have given a ruling right away that said, we don't care what the courts say. This is a private institution. The NCAA, college football, you're not playing. We're not allowing you to play. And nobody ever does anything like that, because it's all about winning. It's all about the ego. And so Texas Tech, of course, is going to look the other way. That's why you have to take it out of their hands. But they allowed it to happen. Now you're guilty by association. It happens all the time. Listen to Chris Carter, man, and get a fall guy.
Everybody's got their own take on this. And I don't know. I'm sure Drew follows this person on Twitter, Michelle K4040. You follow her? Boy, she went to the internet last night, did she ever. I should be sleeping, but I'm just too upset about this Sorsby situation. This is the clearest case for NCAA enforcement, and yet all of that can be upended by a locally elected judge without any articulated legal bias.
Right.
This is an external crisis, and I hope the NCAA treats it as such. Just go look at the video she posted about it.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
All I'm going to say is all that's missing is Tom Brady's new seltzer thingy, whatever he's selling. My goodness. Maybe I should follow Michelle.
I do think, though, now that we're talking about this, thinking about it, and you said what they've allowed it to happen. I would disagree. Texas Tech didn't allow anything to happen. Not that they shouldn't be
They allowed him to stay with the program. They didn't cut bait with him. That's what they allowed.
That sentence brought up something, a good thought in my head of, Indiana and Cincinnati did allow it to happen. Whether they knew it or not, that was happening in their building.
Sure.
There should be consequences. There should be an investigation going on. And maybe not just those two programs, but every program should maybe have a reset of regulations and standards going on, because this is happening in more schools than we know.
Let me ask you guys this question. FanDuel fired a bunch of people yesterday, laid off a bunch of people yesterday. Like 500 people were laid off yesterday. What's happening with sports gambling in this country? They cited no more growth, because every state now has it legalized. So those who want to gamble are pretty much already gambling. So where is the sports gambling industry going at this point in time?
Did it already peak?
I think it probably has. I think it peaked about 2 years ago, quite honestly. I mean, that's where I feel. And because it wasn't just FanDuel. You've seen other gambling companies, laying people off now, too. So
we'll be back tomorrow. Jay Binkley, Allie Martin. All of them on the show on a Wednesday.
Go do something nice for somebody. You never know. Change their day, their week, their month, their year. It's simply cool to care. Kansas City, stay kind, stay safe. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Coming up next, it's Cody, Golden, Drew from 10 to 2.